Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 320, Hair, Moon, and Advent Excitement. Saturday, November 25th, 2023. I'm your host, Sarah. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. Each time I record an episode, I post show notes, photographs, and links to things I talk about on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. You can also find this podcast on Libsyn and on many different pod catchers. If there's a particular way you like to listen to podcasts and you've had a difficult time finding my episodes, please let me know. It's usually just a few simple clicks to make sure that Yarns at Yin Hu is added to your podcatcher. I'm grateful for your support of this podcast through Ko-fi. You can show your support by becoming a member with a monthly membership contribution or by making a one-time contribution. I offer quarterly prize drawings for everyone who has made a contribution each quarter. The next drawing will be in late December, and the prize package is really a good one. It's full of goodies that I collected for you during my recent trip to the New York Sheep and Wool Festival in Rhinebeck. You can see a little bit more information about that on Ko-fi and on my episode 319. I've also taken the time to create a gallery of my Rhinebeck photographs. So if you would like to take a look, you can check there. I've uploaded lots of great photos and selfies with knitting friends. This episode features Yarn Lover at Large, an update on my current knitting projects, ever-expanding skill set, and off the shelf. It's a cold and bright sunny day here at Yinhu Chaiyuan. It's about 1 p.m. and I'm finding some quiet time in this holiday weekend to record an episode for you. It's been action-packed around here because we are gearing up for the opening of Orange. This is a music, art, and coffee venue in Delaware Water Gap, Pennsylvania. And Samuel predominantly has been working very hard on the restoration of an historic building in Delaware Water Gap. And I have been helping out as much as I can. Tomorrow, Sunday the 26th, is a grand opening. There are 9 artists displaying their work, and I am very proud to be among them. We will have libations and hors d'oeuvres, and a former student of mine who is a wonderful jazz pianist is coming with her trio. So it's going to be a party. I'm very pleased that some of my friends are able to come and attend. Mary Beth and Tony are coming out from Pittsburgh, and we get to see them today. So that's really exciting. And it's been a lot of work, which means not a lot has been happening on the wool and knitting front, but there's been a little bit of action since I talked to you last. I have been able to take in 2 opportunities to see art at museums. The first, I made a pretty extensive Instagram post about my trip to Unspun, which is currently on view in historic Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, at 3 different sites. And the purpose of this exhibit is to trace the history of silk production in this region of the United States. So I had a really fabulous day out. It was cold, but just like today, beautifully sunny and bright. and we took a car ride out to Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, and did the entire tour as recommended, where you start in one of the oldest Moravian structures in Bethlehem, and then you kind of trace your way to different homes and a museum to see all of the information they have there about silk production. We learned a lot. We talked and laughed a lot. It was a really beautiful and wonderful day out. I also chaperoned a trip to the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York City with some of my colleagues who are art teachers at the school. And the students had an assignment that they were working in pairs and small groups to conduct. So as a chaperone, I had the entire time in the museum at my disposal. So I spent the main part of my day walking through three different exhibition areas. The first is a Korean art exhibit, and it's called Lineages. This Korean art exhibit is small, and it's rotating several times over the course of its presence at the Met. And I was interested in a couple of different pieces. One in particular is made with paper, and printing has been done from the back side. And there is an opening of the paper in the very center of the design. It, even though it's not textile art, it really inspired me in terms of thinking about and working with textiles. So I spent quite a bit of time in that very small exhibit. I was hoping to see some instances of bojagi, the Korean quilting technique, but currently on display, there was nothing there that I could find. So I moved along to the Cecily Brown exhibit, and she has extremely colorful, often in very large format, interiors that are sort of like a cacophony of color and image. You can't always tell exactly what's going on in them until you step back and contemplate for a while. A lot of what this current exhibit is trying to demonstrate is some of the, I guess, feelings of claustrophobia that Cecily Brown and many of us experienced during the pandemic. It's selections of work she completed during the pandemic years, during lockdown, etc., as well as some of her earlier pieces. And that was also very interesting and thought-provoking. And finally, I spent a great deal of time in the arms and armor portion of the Met. I have always walked by it, and I've never spent a lot of time in there. I did not realize how extensive that collection is. And what pulled me in and kept me walking around was looking for information about how textiles were intertwined with different metalwork and welding and chainmail techniques to create the armor. And then, of course, the sheer weight and often the beautiful, ornate detail of the armor itself. So that was kind of an eye-opener for me. I've been to the Met many times and haven't visited that section. Still on my needles is the reversible scarf designed by Nicolette Corley and featured in the Common Threads publication. I have completed 5 repeats of the cabled motif on this beautiful scarf. I'm using hand-dyed yarn spun by Fibertown Emily. And this is like really squishy, supple, bouncy yarn that looks tremendous in cables. I believe I have 4 more repeats of this scarf to knit in order to achieve about a 70, 72 inch length to the scarf. I'm also working on the Stries hat. That's by Marie Renier. It is featured in the Neons and Neutrals book, and it's my second time knitting this hat. This time it's for my sister, and I've pulled together some yarns that I have in various shades of purple. As I mentioned in my previous episode, this hat is a really great stash-busting hat because you're holding either 2 or 3 yarns together to do the knitting. And you can follow the directions, of course, but once you understand the concept, you really could go off on your own and use up lots of even smaller pieces of scraps and play around with different weights of yarn too. I'm knitting toward the crown of this hat. I would say I was about 75% complete on that project. In the meantime, while still having those items on the needles, I have begun a test crochet. Early this summer, I saw a post on Instagram from Mesa Tamakawa. She is the proprietor of P2M. Together with PQ, they post patterns and also yarn offerings. They're very interesting duo with quite thoughtful and innovative approach to design. And perhaps not all, but many patterns that they put out are offered in both a knit and a crochet version. At the time when I initially saw this top, which is a cropped flowy sweater, you know, very loose fit with ruffles down one side of the front in like a mohair or something like that. I was taken. I didn't even realize that the post I saw was a crochet design. And underneath it just said something like coming soon or I'm working on this. And I could not get that design out of my mind. So it came time for Rhinebeck knitting and the pattern still wasn't available. It was still in process. She was still getting it ready for test knitters. But I wanted something along those lines because it really, really stuck with me. And that's one of the reasons I ended up knitting Darta as my Rhinebeck sweater, because the aesthetic is very similar to this crocheted top. So I knit the Darta, went to Rhinebeck, and then very shortly after returning from my weekend at Rhinebeck, Mesa posted the call for test crocheters and then test knitters, because she did work up both a crochet and knit version of this top. It is very similar in structure to Nimue, a sweater that was included in the volume or the issue number, but it's the pom-pom issue that was curated by Nora Gahn and featured a lot of cables. The sweater that I ended up knitting is by Cerilia Rose, and it's called Nimue because it is inspired by the notion of the Lady of the Lake and the 3 swords that were tossed into the magical lake and so on and so forth. So the shape of this is very wearable. It's kind of like a construction that I love, and this new pattern from Mesa is very similar. So I felt motivated and I felt eager, and I messaged Mesa that I was interested in a test knit or a test crochet. and she chose me for the crochet version of this pattern. I have not talked very much about crochet on this podcast. I looked and the last thing I crocheted was the box set bag from an issue of Making, and the pattern is by Cal Patch, who is an infamous promoter of crochet. She and a friend have The C Word, which is a booth at festivals like Rhinebeck. They were at Rhinebeck. And even though I haven't done a great deal of crochet, that is the beginning of my interest in the fiber arts. There are some listeners who have been around for all of my episodes and may be familiar with this story, but for those of you who aren't, I'll just do a little recap of my introduction to the fiber arts, because I did not grow up working with knitting or crochet as a child. I was decidedly not crafty. The rest of my family members had lots of interests and hobbies that involved fine motor skills and working with their hands. And I, as a form of rebellion perhaps, and also the frustration I experienced of all of those projects and all of those little parts and pieces always about me in a very small home, I just was a reader. A book was simple. You could close the book and put it away. And that's how I spent, you know, most of my adolescence and well into my adulthood, was as a voracious reader. That's what I mostly did as a hobby. So my introduction to the fiber arts came when, about 14 years ago, 14 or 15 years ago now, there was a course offering in my school district where I teach through the wellness department called Crochet for Stress Relief. And the entire staff was like a flutter with this news that there was a crochet class that you could do for professional development, and it was being taught by our assistant superintendent. A friend and colleague of mine was really keen to join up for the class and didn't want to do that without me. I had zero interest, like maybe less than zero, and I was unwilling. But eventually she convinced me, and we went the first day, and it was super organized, and we got the basics, and we went the second week. And this was like an after-school workshop on Wednesday afternoons. And on the second week, we started a washcloth with a crochet hook and some cotton yarn that were part of the kit. And I was really getting the hang of it. In addition to the teacher of the class, and here's educators for you, a number of teachers who already knew how to knit and crochet signed up for the course, with the distinct objective of just being available to help others, because they knew how difficult it was to teach a hands-on activity and just be one person. So there was lots of help in the room and not just from the instructor. And by the end of that second afternoon, I really got it. So I went home and we were expecting a snowstorm, and we got a snowstorm. We had no school on Thursday. We had no school on Friday, and I was at home with my crochet hook and all of the yarn from the kit. So I finished my washcloth, and then I started crocheting up all of the other yarn that was in my kit, and I started watching some YouTube videos, and then I unraveled everything and crocheted it again. And then I started looking around among my things, like maybe I had some yarn in a craft box or something that I could use for crochet, and I crocheted that. And I really couldn't wait for the roads to clear up so that I could get to a craft store and get more yarn to crochet. It really, really bit into me. My friend who had convinced me to take the course was a total fail and turned all of her stuff over to me as soon as the course was over. So time went on, and the teacher of that course, the assistant superintendent, became my boss, because that's when I transferred into the gifted and talented department, and she is the head of that department. And I kept crocheting, kept finding patterns and projects, and then I decided I really wanted the fabric that you could create through knitting. And very quickly and very easily, I was able to teach myself to knit with videos, because I already had a lot of dexterity and a lot of experience working with yarn. I also remembered something the teacher said, which kind of went in one ear and out the other at the time, but she mentioned, if any of you are just starting and you don't already know how to knit, just remember, if you ever do want to learn to knit, it will be easiest for you to be a continental knitter, because you hold the yarn in your left hand. And so that piece of information kind of came back to me, and I am a continental knitter. I find it very easy to hold the yarn in my left hand. And then it was very, very easy when I wanted to learn color work knitting to use the method where you hold one color in each hand, the dominant color in the right hand and the contrast color in the left hand. And so I use that method. And even though I am predominantly a knitter, and if you asked me to choose one, I would say knitting, hands down. I really like the fabric. I like the lightness that knitted fabric creates. I am never, ever sorry that my introduction to the fiber arts was through crochet. Because I learned how to hold the yarn in my left hand, and because so many crochet techniques are useful and helpful for knitters. So if you are a knitter with no knowledge of crochet, I encourage you to learn some of the basics if you can, because you can find them useful in your knitting in ways you never imagined. And so now I find myself test crocheting this pattern that I've been salivating over for months and months, and feeling a little rusty with my crochet, especially when it comes to using a pattern to create something. It's one thing to know some techniques and use a crochet hook as a tool. It's another to crochet an entire garment. But I'm finding Mesa's directions very clear and easy to follow, and I'm just looking up tutorial videos when I need them. This is not one of those test crochets where it's like very secretive. The pattern is called Core, K-O-R-E. It will be available probably sometime in January, and I will be tagging the designer in my post about this episode and also linking in the show notes. So if you want to know more and follow it a little more carefully, you certainly can. The yarn I chose is Linen Quill and Tussock from Pearl Soho. And I chose that because it was recommended by the designer, and because at the time I bought the yarn, I learned that there was a 25% off sale from Pearl Soho, because they were recognized for their industry service. I used a Japanese color dictionary that was a gift from Mary Beth to identify three colors that I wanted to play together for this design. The garment is knit in linen quill. Correction. The garment is crocheted in linen quill, and I chose dark iris, a deep purple color, for the body of the garment. And then the ruffles are crocheted with sometimes like a silk mohair blend or something like that. And I chose the tussock from Pearl Soho in the colors saffron and Anjou pear. So it's kind of an unusual color combination for me, but I'm loosened up a little after knitting Darta with kind of a striking color combination and what felt to me like a little bit of risk-taking with bright fuchsia ruffles. The ruffles on Core, this crochet design, run up the sides of the garment closer to the shoulder. There are two rows on each side. And there are options for a ruffle or also just a line of a contrast color. And they are, the placement of those is determined by a double column of back post double crochet. So it's very similar to Darta in that the ruffles were anchored to this twisted stitch column that was running up the front of the sweater. There's like a place to anchor it. I'm making some mistakes with my crochet and I'm weighing whether or not to rip back and fix or just move on and how noticeable the error will be. Of course, the great, great difference between crochet and knitting is that in crochet, you can't drop down to fix an error. You have to decide if you're going to live with it or if you're going to unravel all the way back to that mistake. Mostly I'm finding I can live with it. And also I'm understanding how the thing will come together, whether or not this error will really be noticeable. So I was making some mistakes in missing a back post double crochet because it's on the wrong side of the work and I was daydreaming and not thinking about where that stitch needed to go, and I sort of went past it. So what I found very helpful was to go through all of my notions and find some of the notions I had been using for crochet. And I have crochet stitch markers, which are open as opposed to closed because they don't stay on your needle. They just sit in the stitch. And I had been using bulb stitch markers because you do need something that will open and close, but they're very fiddly and you have to open them all the way and close them all the way. And a crochet stitch marker is an almost closed circle that slips around the stitch nice and easy. This pattern is crocheted at a fine gauge. Linen quill is a pretty fine, it's like a light fingering yarn. And I'm using a C crochet hook, which I believe is 2.75 millimeter. Now that I've spoken my way through this segment, I'm wondering how many times I said knit when I really meant crochet. I'm sure you've been playing along and counting. This test crochet is due by the end of December. My hope is to complete it by the solstice because I would like to cast on for a knitted sweater using my title yarn's purchase at the solstice. So we'll see. And I also want to complete the Stries hat and continue making strides on that reversible scarf as well. In addition, I have decided to take on a 15 minutes a day spinning for a 100 days project. My most memorable 100 days project was the year that I wore a wool and dress every day for 100 days in a row and photographed my efforts on Instagram. That was awesome. And last year I made an attempt which kind of fell flat because life interrupted and my health was not so great. And this year, I really wanted to do something splashy and colorful, something that would photograph really well and be amazing. And I have been trying to be older and wiser in my choices for things. And it was abundantly clear to me that doing something with stitching or doing something splashy and colorful was probably not something that I could really thoroughly make that commitment. So I thought about things I want to work on anyway, and I thought about my available time and the rhythms of my life, and I decided that I would commit to 15 minutes a day spinning my fleece from Lenore. This was a shared purchase I made at Maryland Sheep and Wool with my friends Sarah and Emily. And over the summer, I really went through the locks very painstakingly, opened all the tips, and I washed the fleece. And I borrowed a drum carder from my friend Hope, and I created, I don't know, somewhere in the teens, like 13, 14, 15, really gorgeous bats of this fleece, which is a dark, fine fleece. So I started spinning it on my Luette wheel, and it spins like a dream, but I just haven't stuck with the spinning. So I feel like this 15 minutes a day, and sometimes it may be far longer than that, and sometimes I may just barely get in 15 minutes, will be a great way to spin and ply that fleece over the course of 100 days. And then it will be early March, and it would be a great time to knit that fleece up in time for Maryland Sheep and Wool's return, because I would love to go back to the festival with the sweater that I have knit. I've been looking very carefully at different designs and patterns. Of course, there's always something new that's tempting, but right now I have my eye on the pattern that I would like to knit. This is, of course, dependent on the yardage that I get from this spin, but so far it's spinning up quite fine without much effort from me at all. I'm just letting this fiber go with where it naturally goes in terms of spinning. I'm not trying to force anything. And I think it's my estimation that a 2-ply of this fiber will result in fingering to sport weight yarn, and I'm thinking at least 1,000 yards. That's my guess. So we'll see how it pans out. I like to start a 100-day project on Black Friday and have it take me through the holiday season and into the spring. So I feel good about having started that, and I'm looking forward to starting some mornings before I do anything else. Just walk down the stairs in the quiet and the dark and work on some spinning as a way to start my day. And then once Advent season starts, are you excited for Advent? I am, because for the first time in my adult life, I have an Advent calendar. And I'm so excited to be working on a puzzle, and there are some gifts included in my Advent package, and I just think it will be lovely to open a little parcel each morning when I complete my spinning during the Advent season, and just a really good way to start the day in a quiet, contemplative way. Do you have an Advent calendar, either one that you purchased or one that you made, or some way to kind of open the door to each day as the year darkens and the days shorten? It can be very helpful to have those little moments of brightness and hope, things to look forward to. And so I'm very much looking forward to my Advent calendar, and I'm hoping that Pam, my swap partner, enjoys all of the gifts and goodies and the puzzle that I made and sent to her. ever-expanding skill set. I was very fortunate to have a free evening over the past few weeks and got together at my friend Dee's house with some other women, all artists, and do a little bit of painting and printmaking. Everyone was working on something a little bit different, but I seized the opportunity to work on another Lana cut. Instead of the traditional linoleum, I did use a rubber block, which is much easier for me to manipulate with my hands still being and my dexterity really being compromised with neuropathy still. I knew that I would have this evening to devote to making a print, and I had in my head the idea that I wanted to make kind of a holiday card print. And I looked on the internet for like ideas and inspiration. And also I looked through cards. I've been looking through cards that I've received over time because people, in their efforts to support me and show me their love, send these beautiful greeting cards. And I open them and I treasure them. I look at each one. And then I have some pangs of remorse if they pile up to a point where I really should think about getting rid of some of them. I'm not really a scrapbooker or use them for collage or anything like that. I save a few. But I've been thinking and thinking about how to, like, not just save them and have them, because I'm a firm believer that, you know, really important things in our lives are like what we interact with. And so I was looking for a way to like keep interacting with these notes and these cards beyond opening them and initially reading them. And I've taken to carrying a bunch around with me in my handbag and using them as note paper. There's often like a lot of blank or white space still on the card. And I use it to make grocery lists. I use it to jot down ideas. I use it to sketch out plans for things. And then each time I do that, I'm opening the card and I'm reading the sentiments again. And I'm actively engaging with this love and support that friends and family are sending to me. And I want to pass that on to you as an idea. A lot of us receive holiday greetings on cards throughout the month of December. And if you don't display them in your home, you might be at a loss like what to do with all of these. But I encourage you, just stuff a bunch of them in your handbag and use them to create notes and lists and scratch down ideas, and you'll continue to interact and enjoy them throughout the holiday season. So anyway, I was using one of these cards to jot down ideas and sketch out ideas I had for a holiday card design, and I remembered one of the most beautiful cards I've ever received from my friend Christy. She sent me this glorious card several years ago when I was initially diagnosed with breast cancer. And on it was a rabbit looking at the moon. It's called Hair Moon. And I have since researched a little bit about this tradition of the Hair Moon. And ancient people believed, probably having to do with the idea of rabbits and having a very high fertility rate, that the hair is a symbol of like fertility and abundance and rebirth and regrowth. And so it was a really amazingly appropriate visual gesture to send someone who is attempting to heal and kind of restart. And that image has stuck with me. And so I decided that I would try my own version of this. The Hair Moon is not December's full moon. The Hair Moon is May's full moon, more appropriate to the time when rabbits are procreating. But this year, 2023, is the year of the rabbit. So I thought a hair moon on a holiday card might be appropriate. And so I sketched out my ideas, and then I carved out my ideas on a rubber block, and I created what is so far my very favorite print. And I haven't done much printing, but each time I engage with it a little more thoroughly, each time I think more carefully about light and dark and the relationship between them and the way you need to carve out things that will remain light and bring forward in relief, things that will have the paint applied to them. And it's all this sort of like inside out, upside down thinking process that leaves my brain a little bit fried, frankly, but is also a really good exercise. Like, I feel like I'm really digging into it the more I think about it. And so with this print, I have two distinct areas in the frame, and one area remains dark with a unprinted or bright moon, and the other area is pale, like the moon shining on snow, with the hair as a dark image coming up in the foreground. I'm really, really super pleased with it. And I feel like it's a good marker to sort of close the year. I feel proud of sending out these cards to some family and friends. And I'm already thinking about future printing projects, because this has become kind of like a little bit of a mental obsession with me, to think about line and color and shape, to think with a little bit more of an artist's eye. I have been used to thinking in terms of making garments predominantly, and I feel like this is a slight departure from that and something that excites my brain a little bit. For Off the Shelf today, I'd like to share a poem with you by Naomi Shihab Nye. I've been following Naomi Shihab Nye for many, many years and have been fortunate to be a student in some of her poetry classes and seminars, and to see her read live at the Geraldine R. Dodge Poetry Festival that's held in New Jersey every other year. In fact, it was 1998, I believe, when I first attended that festival. I was a student at Centenary College, now Centenary University in Hackettstown, and the poetry festival was happening very nearby. I walked to the big tent, and Naomi Nye was reading, and she read Valentine for Ernest, and I just fell in love with her work and the very careful, loving way that she reads and she writes her poetry. She was a teacher of young people for many, many years, and that shows in her work. Naomi Nye's ancestry is American and Palestinian. Her father was a Palestinian, and she spent many years in the Middle East and then many trips as an adult going to the Middle East. She writes very thoughtfully about issues like the ones that we are considering yet again today. And so she's been posting poems on Instagram by herself and by others, and I thought I would share this one with you titled 38 Billion. 38 Billion comes from a book of poetry she published in April of 2019. It's called The Tiny Journalist, and it was inspired by this young girl. I believe then she was 7, like preteen, Jana Jihad, and she was reporting through journalism what she was experiencing in the West Bank. And Naomi Nye, being struck by this, started writing poems through this young journalist's voice. Jana Jihad is known for a line in one of her pieces saying that her camera is her gun. And she was taking photographs and writing about her experiences. So this is 38 Billion by Naomi Shihab Nye from her book, her collection of poetry, The Tiny Journalist, which honors this young person. 38 billion. It's hard to grasp very big numbers and distant concepts, like imagining what all our thoughts might have been if we lived 300 years ago. Would they be centered on a goat or six rocks piled together? Or would they be as wide as they are now? In those long ago days, would people be meaner to one another or nicer? I have no idea. But sometimes I wonder what $38 billion could buy instead of weapons aimed against us. And this is what comes to mind. Eggs. Pencils. Undershirts of very soft cotton. Ribbons, radios, shining flashlights, homemade clay plates, chocolates, really soft pillows, baskets, bracelets, running shoes. 38 billion. It's hard to grasp very big numbers and distant concepts, like imagining what all our thoughts might have been if we lived 300 years ago. Would they be centered on a goat or six rocks piled together? Or would they be wide as they are now? In those long ago days, would people be meaner to one another or nicer? I have no idea. But sometimes I wonder what $38 billion could buy instead of weapons aimed at against us. And this is what comes to mind. Eggs, pencils, undershirts of very soft cotton, ribbons, radios, shining flashlights, homemade clay plates, chocolates, really soft pillows, baskets, bracelets, running shoes. Thanks for joining me today. I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful week and that it contains some time for the crafting you enjoy. Take care.